everyone, welcome back to a new episode of Unrooted. Today, Kelsey and I are going to be talking about our own perspectives on the education systems that surround us. But before we get into that, let me introduce myself. My name is Lizea, and I am a part Plains Cree woman who is a part of the podcast and occasionally the columnist team here at the Indigenous Foundation. I'll pass over the mic to my wonderful co-host, Kelsey.
Anin Bojo, Kelsey Indishnikaz, Anishnabe, Minwa Jaganash Kwe and Dao, Gawin Mchigikin Mazi and Dodem, Sagin Donjaba. Hello everyone, my name is Kelsey, my pronouns are she, her, and I am Anishnabe and Dutch from Sagin First Nation. And I am also a part of the podcast and projects teams for the Indigenous Foundation. And I'm so excited to be able to talk about the topic of education from an Indigenous perspective today. And I'm so excited to hear our guest, Zhaoneng, and hear all the knowledge that he has to share, because I know he has so much and I learn so much from him all the time. So I'm so excited for that. And yeah, let's get into it.
Before we begin this episode, Kelsey and I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the traditional land we are living on. Currently, I am residing on Treaty 7 territory, home to the Blackfoot Nations, including the Siksika, Piikani, Kainai, Tsuut'ina Nation, and Stony Nakoda, along with Métis Nation Region 3, and everyone else who calls this place home.
I would like to acknowledge that I am a guest occupying the traditional Mississaugi Anishinaabeg territory, which is associated with the Williams Treaty of 1923 and the Rice Lake Treaty No. 20 of 1818. And I'm grateful that the Indigenous peoples of this territory and Turtle Island as a whole have been caretakers and inhabitants of the land since time immemorial. And I would like to say that the Mississaugi Anishinaabeg teachings, ceremonies, language, and traditions should be intrinsic to the territory and duly respected with each of our own ways of living. And to close it up, I would just like to say that land acknowledgements come with more than just stating where you are and how you're going to respect the territory. It comes with actions. So I'm committing to support Indigenous peoples of this land in the best way I can. Miigwech.
I also wanted to just add on to what Kelsey has mentioned. Land acknowledgements are the bare minimum, and just reading off what land you are on from a piece of paper, honestly, it's better than nothing, but as Indigenous people, I feel like we want more. We want, like, allies who actually will fight for us when it really comes down, and who actually respect the treaties that are put in place, and people who actually acknowledge and engage with the Indigenous people that you, whose land you are living on. And we want you to engage with the Indigenous communities that are near you. Land acknowledgements are a topic that we should save for a whole different podcast episode, so let's get right into talking about the education system and our opinions on it.
Anin Bojo, today we have our special guest, Zhaoneng. He is a content creator that specializes in TikTok, and he's also one of my close friends. So I will hand it over to him to introduce himself.
Miigwech, Kelsey. Anin Bojo, everybody. Zhaoneng Indigenakaz, Jijak and Dodem, Igan Zibi Anishinaabe, Indonjaba. So my name is Zhaoneng. I said that I was a Crane clan member, and I am an Anishinaabe man from the reservation and community of Kitigan Zibi First Nation, just across the border in Quebec. So Kelsey kindly introduced me as a content creator, land-based education, Indigenous activism, and all that kind of fun stuff out into the world for everybody to hear and listen and appreciate. So I'm really, really excited to be here. This is my first podcast, and I'm so honored and grateful to be invited to this. And I'm just so excited to get started and get into this wonderful conversation with you guys. So thank you so much for having me.
Miigwech. We're happy to have you here, and we're excited to hear what kind of knowledge you're planning on sharing with us. So I think we'll go straight into our first question here.
So what are your guys' opinions on our current education systems that are in place today?
I do have quite an interesting history with the educational system, and something that'll get more in depth in a little later on. But I've kind of watched the educational system kind of change over the years. I've said this to many people, but I think that our generation, especially people our age, have really been moving through a really different time. It's almost like there's a shift happening, and we're kind of living through it, because just 10 years ago, like as a lot of us our age would have been going into, you know, the grades like 6 and 7 and that sort of thing, there wasn't anything that you see today. It seems like in the last 5-10 years, the educational system has really been taking a bit of a turn, as Indigenous peoples are getting a voice and are kind of banding together to get our truths out there. So in my opinion, I think that the educational system is on the right track. However, there is a lot more work to do than we anticipate, as always. I think that Indigenous kids need to feel more welcomed and need to hear their voices and hear other Indigenous voices shared in the educational system. Growing up, I never saw Indigenous knowledge. I never saw Indigenous peoples shown in the educational system, unless it was focused kind of in the past tense, talked about in history. I never grew up seeing, you know, Indigenous activism talked about in school. I never got to see Indigenous peoples doing incredible things in school, because those things just weren't talked about. So nowadays, I've been seeing a major shift in all that, and I'm starting to see a lot more Indigenous kids kind of getting their recognition and being honored for who they are in the school system. I know that has a lot to do with the curriculum changes, and there's a lot more Indigenous teachers now, and there's more Indigenous knowledge holders that are being reached out to and are going to classrooms and giving talks. And Indigenous kids are finally starting to see Indigenous peoples in the school system and in the curriculum.
Miigwech, for sharing that. I agree on a lot of levels with what you had shared with us. Firstly, I would like to touch on your point of saying that the educational systems are starting to shift. And I've really been seeing that as well, because first of all, they are colonial institutes. So it is very different for Indigenous students and Indigenous peoples to be able to learn in these schools, which we will talk about later. But I'm really liking the shift where people are allowing different types of learning to occur and the accommodations made for people who learn in different ways, because I've always had a problem with the fact that we're all taught the same way and graded by the same systems, which is very unfair because we all learn differently. And I think that has a lot to do with the Western influence, because they're pushing one certain way of living and being onto people through the schooling systems. So that shift is so important. And I would also like to say that when it comes to the current education systems, I see very many flaws with it, because there is hierarchies within it and authority figures that don't really do much to actually support the children and the people who are hoping to learn. And I can only really speak so much on it, because I only feels like recently came out of high school, and my whole education experience during high school and before that was in a Catholic school. So it's very different. And I'm personally going through a shift as I'm in university, but I would say it's been very different and very difficult because of all the Western influences within it.
Yeah, so just to add on to a few of Kelsey's points, I personally feel like a grade does not define your intellectual ability. I feel like as Kelsey mentioned, everyone learns in such different ways, and just like by giving tests and like taking notes and stuff, it's like that's not Indigenous people's traditional way of learning. We normally would, like, you know, learn through elders and stories and like oral teachings and stuff. And also, just at school, like as Kelsey mentioned, she went to a Catholic school. I'm currently in like a Catholic school system. And just being an Indigenous person, I feel like there's a lack of safety. Like, I don't feel like as safe as I should be feeling when I'm at school. And I feel like there's not enough resources for Indigenous kids in school. So I feel like the current education systems are very flawed.
I really like that point that Kelsey brought up about how we all learn differently, and I am a prime example of that. And I'll get into my educational kind of story in the next question. But growing up, I was taught very traditionally at a very young age. So when I got into the colonial education system, I was kind of hit with, I was kind of shocked, you know, because that system is designed to teach everybody in the same way. Everybody's supposed to know how to read. Everybody's supposed to know how to listen and do all these things equally. And that's just not the case, right? Everybody's different. Everybody comes from different backgrounds, and those things need to be honored and respected and kind of tailored to. Every kid is going to learn differently, and I think that just needs more work to be able to help those students, as I wish I had a lot of help growing up as well.
The next question is, how are your educational experiences as Indigenous peoples different than our non-Indigenous counterparts?
I'll answer that question by kind of telling a story. Like all good Indigenous people share information is through the power of story. So I grew up pretty traditionally, but I like to use the term semi-traditional because I still was very influenced by the Western world, of course, growing up in the 21st century, but I grew up very traditional. And so my parents ensured that I learned from an Indigenous perspective growing up. So basically, right from when I was a baby, I was constantly surrounded by and influenced by my elders and my parents and my aunties and uncles and all those knowledge holders. And so when I got to kindergarten, my mom, who I'll shout out quickly, Dr. Nicole Bell of Trent University, she's incredible. She was working on her master's thesis. No, sorry, her PhD thesis at the time. And she wanted to be a teacher. And so what she wanted to do was create an Indigenous knowledge-based educational institution. She created a school that delivered the regular Western curriculum that you would have gotten in any public school, but she did it in a Western, in a we sorry, in an Indigenous perspective. So that's where I got my kindergarten. I actually started my schooling in an Indigenous school. So that school was very, very different. Because it was delivered as kind of Indigenous people would deliver education. So I have very faint memories of the place because I don't have a lot of memories from when I was that young. But I do remember when I would go to school, we would always start off the mornings with like a sharing circle. It was almost like a kind of like a little sunrise ceremony kind of thing where we would all meet in a circle and we would all pass around an eagle feather and we would all share something every morning. And we would offer our tobacco every morning. We would have group smudges, and then that was kind of like our starting to the day. The school, you can look it up. It's actually called the Minno-Bimadzuwin Cultural Healing and Learning Center, I think. I could be getting that wrong, but it ran only for a couple of years, and my mom was actually forced to kind of shut the school down because she was unable to get the adequate funding from the federal government in order to keep the school open. So she was having to kind of pay for the place out of pocket. And so it wasn't sustainable. They couldn't keep doing that. So I actually started my educational journey right in an Indigenous school. And we learned the language in that school. And even so, that was where I started my educational world. And it was very tailored to me. And that's how I learned how to learn. So when I got into the Western educational system, it was very difficult for me because I went from, you know, being taught in circles and learning from elders to being in a linear classroom where everybody is facing a blackboard and the teacher would talk about stuff that, you know, I don't even care about. Just like algebra and all this stuff that I don't even use. The teachers, they would teach those things. And it was also difficult because Indigenous kids also face racism in schools. And I faced my fair share of racism too. So I went from that welcomed me and loved me to a Western institute where, you know, my hair was being pulled on and I was being called a girl and all this other stuff that Indigenous kids had to face. I actually couldn't do the Western educational system anymore. I had to be pulled out, and my mom had to homeschool me for a few years because I couldn't do that school. And then eventually I ended up trying a Catholic school, which I only lasted about 3 weeks in. I tried a Catholic school because one of my childhood best friends was there, and I thought I should go to school with him, and I thought that'd be a lot of fun. But when I got there, the teacher was immediately suggesting to my mom that I should be put down a few grades. I was told that I wasn't smart enough, and the teacher tried to say that I should be in a grade lower because I wasn't excelling. But really, the reality was that I was just excited to be in a school with my friend, and I didn't really care about school, so they just thought I was stupid. So I didn't last very long in that institute. And then from there, I found myself going to school at a cute little school in Lakefield, Ontario, where they offered an Anishinaabemowin, an Ojibwe language course. And there I learned from Elder Merritt Taylor from Curve Lake, who that was kind of my little taste of home, because I was still going to a Western institution, but I had a little taste of that indigenous method. So I would, for part of the day, I would be in my very linear classroom facing a blackboard again. But then for one period of the day, I got to go to Merritt Taylor's classroom, where all the desks were in a circle, and there was a giant medicine wheel on the floor, and Merritt Taylor would offer us and would teach us the language in that classroom, where we got to smudge and handle eagle feathers and learn about our territory and our people. So that was kind of like my kind of breathing moment, where it was like, okay, I can do the Western school because I have this little taste of an Indigenous part of my day. I could still do that. And that persisted until I went into high school, because I had Ojibwe language courses from when I was in grade 6 until when I was in grade like 11 or so. So I got that taste. I could kind of break away from the Western perspective and go into an Indigenous classroom, and where I was accepted and where I could, you know, play jokes with my cousins and be around other Indigenous peoples. And I think that's one of the many hurdles, those spaces where they can kind of go into, you know, be able to smudge, be able to learn from elders and so on and so forth. I talked about racism before, and I'll quickly touch on racism again. I think racism is a very big part. Like I said, there's been a big shift in the educational system in the last 10 years. And I think another big part to have to do with that is social media. And social media can be very much a blessing, like I can talk about later. But social media can also be really bad in a lot of ways, because it gives children a platform to be able to speak whatever they like. And there's no repercussions, and there's nobody there to tell them not to. So Indigenous kids in the current educational institutions, they're not always protected by what kids can say and do to them, which I think is very dangerous and something that's very difficult to get through. Growing up in the Western schools, you know, I've faced all kinds of stuff. I've had people push my head into school bus windows and tell me that my skin is the color of poo and all this really awful stuff. And those are things that you never experienced when you went home to your communities, or when I was raised in an Indigenous school. These things never happened, because we were taught about our seven grandfather teachings. We were taught to love each other and to respect each other. And so when I went into the Western institutions, you know, those things weren't there. So there were a lot of hurdles that Indigenous kids have to get over in order to succeed in the Western worlds. And especially the Western schools, for sure.
Miigwech, for sharing all of that. Just from even hearing it, there's a lot of commonalities between my own experience and with yours, even though we grew up very differently and in different parts of the so-called Canada even. But yeah, I would like to just start by saying, like, as I had mentioned earlier, I went to a Catholic school from kindergarten up until high school, the end of high school. And it definitely was a very challenging experience, because I remember, like, even the first time I actually realized that I was, like, Indigenous and the only Indigenous student in my class. And it was in, I want to say, fourth grade, because there was a Métis woman that came in and did a presentation, and then she was asking like, oh, does anyone know if they're Indigenous? And I was like, I think I am. And then I went home and asked my parents, and they're like, yeah, you are. You're Anishinaabe, you're Ojibwe. And then from there, it was very much like a struggle to come to terms with my own identity within the educational systems, because they are so westernized and colonized. Because as the years went on, I went back and forth between being so proud of being Indigenous to being ashamed, because people would make racist comments or just insensitive comments or just be uneducated and try and ask me things about being Indigenous that made no sense to me, but I later found out were stereotypes. And with that, it also made it harder for me to learn within colonial institutes as I started to learn more and more about my own culture, about my peoples and our past. And I grew up very disconnected from my culture, but as I started to learn more about it, and especially about the residential and day school systems, I found it hard to even trust colonial institutes, because I couldn't understand why I had to be in one of those, considering what they did to all of my ancestors. And as my years went on in school, it became more clear to me how different my experience was from other students, because I did feel very isolated. Like in social classes or history classes, everyone would turn to me and say, why do we have to learn about the same thing every year? You know, like, we understand that there's Indigenous peoples, like, can they get over it? Can they get over this, all of this past trauma and everything? And that's where it really got to me. And it really made me feel alone in those situations. And it caused me to just want to hide the fact that I was Indigenous. So many people who know me now know that I love to wear, even like wearing those and thinking it's okay to come up and be racist to me or ask me questions that give into stereotypes and that give into all of the issues that are being perpetuated within our communities. And that did end up like creating a lot of mental health issues for me personally. But as I'm going on and learning and becoming more immersed in my culture, it's making it easier for me to be in these educational systems, because I'm understanding that it's okay if it's hard for me, because it's not our traditional ways of learning. Even coming to university, which is where I am now, it was very hard for me to get over the hurdle of just deciding if I wanted to continue attending Western colonial systems, because I know it's not our traditional ways and it does impact me so much. Even though I'm working on it a lot, it definitely is different, because when you are isolated and you go to a school that's very Western and has a lot of religious influence, it does impact your identity and how you feel about yourself and even your own people. And at times I even did start believing in the stereotypes that people would push onto me. So in that way, my experience was different in that I'm guessing it was a lot more negative and challenging than a lot of white people and many other non-Indigenous peoples. But it is definitely something that is getting better with time.
Absolutely.
So I honestly resonated with so much stuff you guys said. Like, I was getting emotional because, like, we all have, and it's so sad because it's still prevalent, like, today. And that just shows, like, that just goes to show that there has been change. There hasn't been lots of change, like, as much change as we want and we need. But one thing that you guys didn't really mention is, like, and I feel like, I don't know if it was just me, but growing up, I always got, like, such bad grades. And I know this could just be because, you know, my own intellectual abilities, but I feel like I've always just kind of struggled to comprehend certain subjects, just because I feel like we've never really connected to
with these types of learning materials before. So at least for me personally, it was harder for me to really understand and connect with the material that my teachers were giving me, because I had never really heard it before. You know, my parents don't talk about algebra and biology and stuff.
What are some things you would change about our current education systems?
That's a really, really great question. And I think being an Indigenous student, I think the three of us and Indigenous kids as a whole, I think every single Indigenous kid could probably tell you one thing or multiple things that they'd like to change about their current system. I, for myself, I think there's two things that I would change. So I'm gonna start us off again with another story. this goes back to middle school. This is a school that's just outside of a reserve and is just outside of my Indigenous community. There's a mixture of Indigenous and non-Indigenous kids. And basically what happened in this classroom was, this was a point in time when residential schools were kind of just starting to make their way into the curriculum, and they were just starting to get talked about. So I was one of the last generations that actually almost went entirely through school without residential schools even being discussed. There's a lot of ignorance in the school system at this point. And what had happened was a lot of teachers and a lot of faculty in the schools were always trying to do the right thing with Indigenous kids, but they didn't quite know what to do. And so what happened to me was, I grew up in an Indigenous community, but there wasn't a lot of kids from my community in my grade. So I actually had class with a lot of the Indigenous kids from the local reservation and from the local First Nation. And so I was in a class with a lot of Native kids, but I wasn't friends with them. Like I knew who they were. They were my cousins and stuff, but I never like hung out with them on recess. Like I hung out with the non-Indigenous kids. Like they were my friends, right? And so what had happened was the teacher kept trying to make me sit with the Native kids. What happened was that the teacher, and I don't blame this teacher for this, you know, it was a time where everybody was trying to figure it out still. And so there's a lot of ignorance, but the teacher was having all the students sit in one part of the classroom. So all the Indigenous kids, they sat in one part of the classroom, and the teacher was in charge of the seating order. And I think the teacher's intent was that, you know, the Indigenous kids, they stuck together and they were friends and they were family. And so she thought that she was doing the right thing by having them sit together. But that also included me, and I wasn't really a part of their group either. So I was really upset because my teacher kept making me sit with the Native kids and not with my friends who were non-Indigenous. And every month or so, every month, she would change the seating plan, and she would move all the non-Indigenous kids around to who they want to sit with, and they would change them around. But then the Native side of the classroom, you know, there's maybe six or seven of us. She would just shuffle us around a little bit. And, you know, maybe my cousin might be on my left, and then after the seating plan, my cousin would then be on my right. You know, it was just kind of like, it was really funny. And that really bothered me. That really made me mad, because I wanted to sit with my friends. So I finally told my mom, and my mom freaked out. Rightfully so. My mom got really angry. And then I ended up actually getting pulled out of school for the last month and a half. And I figured out grade seven on my own with my mom for the last couple months. Basically, the point of my story is that I think what needs to change in our current educational system are two very important things. The first thing, I think that the people working in these institutions and the people who are in charge of controlling these institutions and controlling what gets taught about and controls how the classroom atmosphere is handled, those people need to listen to the teachers. They weren't really reaching out to our communities, and they weren't asking our parents, they weren't asking our elders, hey, we have these Indigenous kids in our classroom and we don't quite know what to do. So I think the people who are in charge of these spaces need to be able to say that they don't know what they're doing, and to be able to ask for help in the right places. Because whether you like it or not, Indigenous kids are different than non-Indigenous kids in Canada. You know, we have to grow up and deal with different things, and we have to face different things in different ways. So how we learn is going to be very different. And the teachers and the people in charge of these spaces need to be able to ask for help and kind of reteach themselves how they go about navigating the classroom. Because I think that if that teacher had just talked to me and learned my story, you know, maybe she would have allowed me to sit with my friends and not think that they know what's best for us as Indigenous kids. I think one of my other points is that we're in a point in time right now where the words truth and reconciliation are getting spoken a lot. I think a lot of that has a really big part to play in our educational institutions. And I think what really needs to happen for the next while is, I think a lot of truths have to be spoken in school. When I was growing up, at the same time that I was having troubles in that classroom, residential schools weren't being talked about. And I reached a point where I would go home to my mom and my mom would ask me like, hey, are you guys learning about residential schools? Are you guys learning about the 60 scoop? Are you guys learning about boarding schools? Are you guys learning about the Indian Act? Are you guys learning about colonization? And I'd be like, what? No. And my mom would get so mad, and she would have to go into my classrooms and she'd have to deliver her own teachings to my classroom. I remember in grade 8, my mom came, did her own segment of talking about residential schools and how they affected Indigenous peoples. She had to come into the public school and teach that herself because the teachers weren't doing it. And so these things need to be talked about. And not only do they need to be talked about, they need to be talked about as a present issue. A really big problem with how these things are being talked about in school is that they're being talked about like it's a part of our history, like it's already happened. But they haven't already happened. They're continuing. And, you know, it's only just our grandparents and sometimes our parents who had to go to these schools. So these very places are still impacting our communities to this very day. And they will continue to do that for the next few generations. And that's just the reality. And so the schools and the curriculum need to speak these truths and talk about what really happened in Canada and with the Indigenous peoples. But they need to do it talking about it like it's a current issue, because it is a current issue. These truths, you know, you can't be afraid to speak them either, because they can be hard to hear and they can be hard to share. If you've heard of truth and reconciliation, you've probably heard that you can't have reconciliation without first having truth. And so I think in our schools, we need to be sharing these things, but we need to tell the truth and we can't be afraid to say it, because we underestimate kids. Kids can handle things. Like you can share the story of residential school with public school age kids, and they can handle it and they can learn that. They can empathize with those stories. We can't be afraid to tell somebody who's in grade 6 about the residential school experience, because they can handle that. I just think that Indigenous kids, Indigenous communities, Indigenous parents, residential school survivors, they all need to be listened to, and they need to be asked questions on how to teach kids. And then the truth has to be spoken. We need to teach these things from the Indigenous perspective. We need to listen to survivors. We need to talk about residential schools. We have to talk about the 60s scoop. We have to talk about the Indian Act. We have to talk about, you know, colonization and the impacts it has had on Indigenous populations. We have to talk about these things that are hard to talk about. We're going to continue to live in ignorance. And with ignorance comes racism, bullying, and comes all those things. Because I think the reason we all faced such racism in school was because our lives were different and kids didn't know how to react with that. There's a lot of misconceptions and a lot of stereotypes in our communities that aren't being talked about in school. And so kids continue this lateral violence of racism because they don't know the truth of the indigenous community. If kids in school are shown the true history of Indigenous peoples and are actually truly shown why it is that Indigenous kids are struggling more than non-Indigenous, and see why it is that Indigenous people are still grieving and still being affected by the residential school system, if the kids truly saw that and knows the truth, I think we'd see a lot less racism and a lot less stereotypes.
I feel like you were kind of going along the lines of like decolonizing curriculums, you know, like the first thing. And I feel like that's really important to talk about. Like you were talking about how your mom would come in and teach her own lessons and stuff. Like that's so cool. Like, and I feel like more people like just need to be. But adding on to that, I think that there needs to be like more Indigenous representation among teachers. Because let me tell a little story myself. I am actually in an Indigenous studies class right now, mind you, Catholic school, and no offense to my teacher or anything, he's pretty good, but he's like a white man and he's teaching an Indigenous studies class, and I don't know, something about that just doesn't really sit right with me. I feel like if we're going to be talking about Indigenous studies and like learning about this stuff, it should be an Indigenous teacher. That way we're getting the full truth and we're not just getting like some colonized point of view on Indigenous peoples. And not only that, I feel like I know we can't make Indigenous like kids come to school and stuff, but As Kelsey mentioned earlier in the podcast, it's like hard being the only Indigenous student in your class and like not having any friends and not being able to have resources because there's not enough Indigenous kids in the school. And adding on to that, I feel like just more resources and programs in middle school. There actually used to be a few at my school because the Indigenous like student population was pretty high. But now that I'm in like a Catholic school with a very little amount of Native kids, there's really no programs for us, for like the small amounts of Indigenous kids that go to my school. And it's hard because like I would like to smudge every day, you know, like I would like to go to just like a room and just hang out and just talk to Indigenous people whenever I'm going through a hard time. I feel like that's just what makes me feel better. And it's so hard to just like go to school and not have any resources for you. You know how classrooms, like desks are always in like linear lines and stuff. Like even just if like there was like even just one class where it's like you would talk in circles and stuff, I would just feel better about learning that way because it's like I would actually feel like my culture and my people matter. Like the school systems, they're like trying to accommodate to us, but that's not the case.
One other point I'd like to add as well is the point of bringing in the Indigenous perspective and the Indigenous methods of learning into the current curriculum in today's classrooms. Like we've talked about a lot in this conversation, we've brought up the conversation of being in a linear classroom. And these are what we mean by this is a classroom where you have a teacher at one end and you have these rows of students all the way to the back of the class. And what this does is it separates the teacher from the students. You know, there's going to be kids at the front row and there's going to be kids at the back row, and they're all going to get a different experience from that teacher. But the Indigenous way is that whenever an elder would be teaching our children, you know, the kids, they would line up and they would surround the elder, and the elder would see everybody's face and see every one of the students equally. And they'd all be right in front of that elder. And the elder can be personal and the elder can talk to these kids individually and equally. Like Lizea was talking about earlier, the Indigenous perspective is very personal. There's a lot of lived experiences getting talked about. And so the current system needs to reach out to knowledge holders and elders to come into these classrooms and to talk to these children. Because Indigenous knowledge isn't something that you can take from a book and deliver to kids and have them understand it. It has to be delivered from Indigenous people who have lived these experiences and are having to deal with them every day. And that's the only true way I think that kids will be able to grasp what truly went on, you know, with the residential school, and will truly see and witness how Indigenous kids are having to face that trauma today. If the actual people themselves are coming into the classroom and are sharing those experiences with those kids.
I also have a question. Why do colonizers always make everything in a linear line?
I think that's a good point. I think that's a very big differentiation between Western and Indigenous. Is Western is very possessive. And the Western world, everybody has to have something and everybody has to have take ownership over who they are, like their hierarchical positions and their things. It's a very possessive world, and your worth isn't measured on kind of your abilities and kind of your journey, but you're more measured on the things you own and the knowledge you have. So I think what happens is when a teacher is in the front of a classroom and all the chairs are in lines like that, it's basically separating the kids from the teacher and saying that the teacher knows everything and the students know nothing. And that's not true. Kids are incredibly smart. Not to say elders aren't smart, but the way the Indigenous peoples have done it is that everybody is on the same journey. We're just at different parts. And so elders share and talk to the kids with the same respect that they would share with one another. And you just don't see that in a Western classroom.
I'd like to say that you both made some very powerful statements and points that I couldn't agree more on. One thing I think should be changed with our current education systems is definitely decolonizing curriculums, as they had both said, because it really starts with our education when we are young, which teaches us how we should treat others when we grow up. So like Zhao Anung said, if we expose younger generations to the true past and the true present that Indigenous peoples are experiencing and all the different issues and events that occurred and has been taking us to where we are today, then we will be able to raise generations that will understand Indigenous peoples better and will stand with Indigenous peoples and will move away from stereotypes and racism, because it's really, to many people, a misunderstanding, which is why a lot of us are mistreated on a daily basis. And with that, like with decolonizing curriculums and educational systems, I think it's really important to tie in traditional Indigenous knowledges with Western sciences, because when it comes to science and Western science, everything is validated in a completely different way than what many Indigenous peoples are taught. So in the very least, I think both of them should be taught, so then we can see how each are important, because as we can see in our current climate, in our current world, a lot of Indigenous knowledges and sciences are showing us what actions we can take to save Mother Earth, just as an example. And I think if we intertwine them, if not have them both on equal levels in the education system, it will bring Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples closer, and it'll bring us all closer to the land and provide different understandings when it comes to sciences. Along with that, I also think it would be very valuable to include traditional languages within schooling a lot more so than they do already, because there are many schools out there that teach Indigenous languages, but I don't think there's enough. I think every school should offer an Indigenous language, because our languages are, these generations are growing up after going through intergenerational trauma and experiencing residential and day schools. So a lot of our languages need to be revived and need to be taught to the youth. So I think it's important, especially because we're all on Indigenous land here, that we honor the languages to the territories and keep them going, and allow, in the very least, allow Indigenous youth who want to learn to be able to learn their languages. That will not only help them become more immersed in their culture, but it'll benefit their mental health, their spiritual health, their physical health, because language is really the foundation of our culture.
Absolutely. I really like that touch on talking about language. One other point I want to make too, that I think goes along with language, is also territory relevance. I think institutions, schools, they need to make sure that whatever approach they decide to take, it has to be kind of, they need to work with their local territory and their local Indigenous peoples. Because you cannot generalize Indigenous peoples into one group. There are over 500 different specific nations across Turtle Island. And so a school in our territory here in Mississauga Anishinaabe territory, its approach to teaching Indigenous knowledge is going to be relative, and it's going to be respecting the Mississauga Anishinaabe and going to be talking about their history. While a school, you know, out towards Thunder Bay or near Manitoulin, their approaches are going to be different, and their language courses are going to be different, because they have to work with their surrounding communities and their territories. Because an Indigenous community out west isn't going to know what's best for a school that's in the east.
So adding on to that, I think it's really important to have educational systems be close with the Indigenous communities near them, as Zhao Anung had mentioned, because when it comes to acknowledging the territory and the peoples of the territory, it relates a lot to the students. So I think Indigenous communities nearby should be involved with creating safe spaces within the schools for Indigenous students, allowing the opportunities for things like counseling specifically for Indigenous peoples. Whether or not people take it up, it should be an option, because whether or not we're actually taught about Indigenous peoples in school, it's going to be tough for us, because like we said many times, this is not the traditional way of learning for Indigenous students. And unless we see big changes, it's going to impact our mental health a lot. So our next question is, as a content creator and having a platform on TikTok and other social media, how does the topic of education and educational systems as an Indigenous person relate to that?
That's awesome. That's a really good question. It kind of reminds me of a really cool point I like to make all the time. And it's that Indigenous peoples are all teachers. We're all taught to be teachers, and we all have our own stories and our own perspectives and things that we share. Indigenous peoples are the biggest storytellers, the biggest educators. It's what social media has done. It has given Indigenous educators and knowledge holders and artists and all these people a platform to speak their voice that people who live in the Western world are able to grasp and understand. Because non-Indigenous peoples, you know, they can't just walk onto a ceremony ground and talk to knowledge holders, talk to elders, and hear their experiences. That's very difficult for those people. So what social media has done has given people like me a platform to reach out to these people and tell our stories and share our knowledge and express it all in a good way. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic has had a huge part to play in that. And it's only been since early 2020 that the Indigenous part of social media has truly, truly taken off. For me, my journey began in September of 2020. So just over a year ago, I kind of just broke my 1 year anniversary of content creating, which I never celebrated, which I should. And my journey began a little over a year ago. And basically what my job is and what I do is I use TikTok and Instagram. The farthest our voice ever got was maybe doing a land acknowledgement at your local assembly. That was like the biggest thing back then. And now, you know, you log on to TikTok, some of the biggest TikTok accounts are Indigenous peoples. You know, you got Notorious Cree and you got Shinova and you got all these beautiful, beautiful Indigenous peoples that not just Indigenous people, but all people on Turtle Island are seeing their faces and are hearing their voices and are learning their stories. You can go onto TikTok, you can see traditional Indigenous dance, you can see throat singing, you can see hand drum, you can see powwow singing, you can see all of it. And it's all right there at our fingertips to see, appreciate, and to learn from. So myself, how I've decided to take it was kind of like a, I'm trying to be like an educator, but kind of also a bit of a comedian, but also like an activist all at the same time. I try to follow my heart and try to follow my passion and follow the dopamine and see where I fit in that week. 1 week I might feel like talking about, you know, the residential schools and the Indian Act, but then the next week comedy videos about, you know, life on the reserve or life in the native community. And so what I hope that I'm doing, I think other people can speak on this better, but what I like to believe that I'm doing is showing other Indigenous kids that you deserve to be seen and that your knowledge and your face and your voice deserves to be seen and honored, all across Turtle Island. So for me, TikTok has been that platform. TikTok and Instagram has been that space. Over the last year, I started out by making, you know, little comedy skits, and I started out by making funny little videos that are probably like less than 15 seconds. And then I learned how to make the videos, and I started to get more serious. And I started to make a series. Like, I have a series where I talk about some of the most important and some of the darker histories of the Indian Act. It's called Indian Act Facts. It's really cool. It's like there's six episodes. It's about 4 minutes long if you watch them all at once. And I started to kind of get more serious as I've gotten kind of more famous. I've started to make more serious videos, and I start to really think about what I want to put on the internet. When I first started, you know, I'd get an idea and I'd go, okay, let's do it really quick. And then I'd really quickly make a video and I'd put it on there and I wouldn't think about it. But now I have a lot of people who see my videos. So I have to constantly think about that. I'm like, what do I want these people to really see? And so I kind of sit myself down and I'm like, okay, let's brainstorm. Like, what do I think these people need to know? And so, you know, my last couple of videos, I shared about the importance of respecting Indigenous technology and not not always believing that the Western world is more advanced than the indigenous world. And then my latest video was reminding people about the cultural appropriation of Halloween costumes and how we shouldn't be wearing Halloween costumes that are racist and are representing indigenous people. And I just kind of take it and I make these videos. I've now reached a point where the followers are coming in a lot faster than they used to be. it kind of compounds. Like, you start off slow, but then once you get more followers, it kind of just starts to take off. It was just a few, probably a week and a half ago, that I celebrated like 30,000 followers, and now it's been like only a week and I'm at 32,000, and it's like, it feels like people are kind of coming in by the hundreds now, like they used to come in by the fives or the tens. It's kind of overwhelming, but it's humbling at the same time. It's a really amazing experience. And along the way, I've made these amazing, amazing connections on TikTok. You know, other TikTok people like Notorious Cree and Shinova and all these other amazing TikTok people, they all follow me and they've all seen my videos, and my face and my voice has been seen and heard by these people. And I think that's really amazing. I really pride myself at knowing that my voice and my videos have reached all of these people. I don't plan on ever stopping. I want to keep making videos. I want to keep gaining a following. And then what I want to do is I want to take all of what I've earned. I want to take my following, and I want to take this recognition, and I want to do good work with it. So down the road, you know, I want to start a brand, and I want to start my own podcast, and I want to start a platform and a collective where I can give back to the community and use my following and use my voice to help other kids and to help other Indigenous kids, because, you know, Indigenous kids are having a really hard time in this country right now. We're all dealing with so much. We're all having to face and deal with intergenerational trauma, while also, you know, dealing with the uncovering of 6,500 plus Indigenous kids that have been found in unmarked graves in residential schools. You know, Indigenous kids are the strongest, most resilient people in this country. And what I'm trying to do is tell them that, like, you know, you can do it. You can get on the internet and you can make videos and you can share your voice and be comfortable with who you are. Love who you are, be proud of who you are as an Indigenous person, and kind of don't be afraid to stand up and live that Indigenous way and live that red road, because that's what I'm trying to do. So that being said, I'm so, so thankful to have been brought onto this podcast. It's been absolutely amazing. If you want to find my videos and check me out, you can find me at Zhaowenung on TikTok and Instagram. That's Zhaowenung at Zhaowenung on TikTok and Instagram. I also have a link tree on my accounts where you can find all kinds of amazing resources to educate yourself on the history of residential schools. You can find articles and websites where you can find information on the Indian Act, on the 60 Scoop, on MMIW awareness, on Two-Spirit information. I have an absolute abundance of amazing resources that people can find and educate themselves at home, because especially during the pandemic, it's hard to get this information. So I try to make it as accessible to people as possible.
Chimi Gwech, I would like to say that, as you were mentioning about the impact you want to make with your platform and with your knowledges, you're definitely doing a lot already. You're definitely one of those people that are not only educating others, but are encouraging people to be proud of who they are and being proud of being Indigenous. So meek much for that. And I'm grateful to be able to have had you on this podcast and share all of your knowledge. And I look forward to talking to you more about all of these issues, because you definitely have a lot to share.
Yeah, hi. I'll bring a little bit of the Cree into it. But thank you so much for just sharing all your knowledge with us. It was really interesting to hear what different perspectives you had to bring to the table, and a lot of what you said resonates with, I'm sure, Kelsey and I, probably so many other people. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us here today. All right, guys, that's the end of this episode.
I feel sad saying goodbye, but it was a very long one. So Kelsey and I had some troubles editing. Some of the voice recordings got cut off a little bit early, so if that happened, just ignore it. It's all right. I'm telling you this at the end of the episode, but it's all right. Regardless, thank you guys so much for staying this far and listening to this episode. We will work together one day to decolonize the education systems. And like Xiaonong and Kelsey said, it's happening slowly, but it will happen one day. So thank you guys so much for sticking around, and we'll see you in the next episode.